Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, January 25th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, "Council Says No to Hogan Park Agreement," by Stuart Doreen. The Hogan Park project, involving a conservancy and up to $30 million in private funding, is over. The Midland City Council voted down an agreement that would have created a signature park in Northeast Midland and $40 million shot in the arm to one of Midland's historical parks on Tuesday. The vote was 4-2, with Amy Stretcher-Burks, Dan Corrales, Robin Poole, and John Norman voting against the possibility of turning Hogan over to the Permian Basin Quality of Life Conservancy. Midland Mayor Lori Blong and Scott Dufford voted for the agreement. Jack Ladd missed the meeting as his wife gave birth to their first child. The meeting was a contentious one, with those who supported and opposed the project, which was set to turn over the park to the Conservancy to design, construct, maintain, and operate Hogan Park. The agreement stated that $10 million minus $5,884,848.42 that the city has already spent on improvements to the Bill Williams Softball Complex and has encumbered for design services for Hogan Park, would be provided to the Conservancy for development costs. It also states the city will provide an annual management fee equal to the lesser of $2 million or actual operating costs. The annual management fee can increase annually based on an index escalator not to exceed 1.035. The Conservancy had $28.5 million raised or committed and expected to raise even more after the approval of an agreement. Hogan Park, they showed, would redo baseball, softball, dog park, and other park features. A large portion of the money committed came from oil companies like Diamondback Energy and Pioneer Natural Resources and Midland Foundation Community. Corrales, right before the vote, sent a message to those entities stating, "This city is not for sale." There was plenty of back and forth. Those in opposition talked about the alleged lack of transparency with the deal, the desire to not see a park privatized, the lack of city representation on the park board, the apparent rush to approve a contract, the need for a citywide vote, and the notion that the city could do the job without a conservancy. Eliel Rosa even said this was an example of private companies doing as they please. Stakeholder capitalism, he said. Supporters of the park said this had been planned for years and was an example of private funders stepping up to make Midland better and take the tax burden off city residents, provided facilities Midland needs, as residents were having to travel across the state for tournaments, was an example of a private-public partnership that the city couldn't do on its own, and had endless articles to show how transparent officials had been. Conservancy members also took questions about their motives, their experience with partnerships, and the agreement itself. One member said that funding attached to Hogan Park project would likely go away without the Conservancy. Tommy Hawkins, the president of the Midland Softball Association and USSSA tournament director, questioned why the council wouldn't treat Hogan Park like the number one asset he believes it is. "Why wouldn't you?" Hawkins said. "I don't understand it." Before the discussion ended, council members were questioning city staff whether the agreement opened up the city to lawsuits, something the city attorney said was not the case. and said the city was capable of raising its own money and could spend money in an account from drilling taking place underneath parks across Midland. The city of Midland, after the meeting, reported parks had received more than $25 million from oil and gas royalty revenues since the start of fiscal year 2022. Still, others believe tens of millions have been left on the table. Today, the way I see it, we just set back our quality of place things by years and years and years, Dufford said. This article is entitled Midland College Begins Search for President by Ben Schaffer. Midland College Board Chair Steve Kaiser stated that Midland College has begun the search for its next president in a press release. Kaiser said that on February 1st, the college will host three public forums facilitated by Bill Holda, the consultant hired by the college to assist in the nationwide search. The forums will be held at 9 a.m., 11 a.m., and 2 p.m. at the Wagner and Brown Auditorium. A Zoom link will be available for those who cannot attend the meeting in person. https://mid-land-edu.zoom.us/j/85662286555. The purpose of these sessions is to listen to your input, which will assist with the development of the presidential profile, he stated. He added that the Midland College community is invited and encouraged to engage in discussion regarding the qualities, characteristics, and qualifications of the school's next leader. At the end of the search process, final candidates will be interviewed by the Board of Trustees, and all finalists will participate in open forums at Midland College, which the board anticipates will take place in May. All MC employees, students, and Midland community members will be invited to the final forums at a place and time to be determined. The consultant for the project is Holda of the Association of Community College Trustees. According to Kaiser, ACCT specializes in one-on-one recruitment of community college leaders. Additionally, advertisements will be placed in the Chronicle of Higher Education and other major publications and websites. A presidential search webpage will be developed in the coming weeks for some public access to updates regarding the process. This article is entitled Big Bend Temporarily Closing Select Areas to Protect Nesting Falcons by Mercedes Cordero. Beginning February 1st, the National Park Service will temporarily close select areas of Big Bend National Park's Chisos Mountains to protect nesting falcons. The closures will last until May 31st, according to a press release from the NPS. The areas closed to public entry are a portion of the East Rim Trail from the southern junction of the Boot Canyon Trail to a point just north of Campsite ER-4. East Rim Campsites ER-4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Technical rock climbing on rock faces within a quarter of a mile of known peregrine eyries. Park officials do not plan to close any other areas, but restrictions may be modified if peregrine falcon behavior or nesting sites do not follow traditional trends, according to the NPS. The peregrine falcon was removed in August 1999 from the Federal Endangered Species List, a move prompted by the falcon's comeback from the brink of extinction. In Texas, it is still listed as a threatened species. National Park Service policies require the protection and preservation of all state-listed species and all species of concern, regardless of federal or state classification, the NPS said in a press release. in keeping with this mandate, and to provide the nesting falcons with areas free of human disturbance, the NPS will again temporarily close or place restrictions on the use of certain lands at Big Bend National Park. This article is entitled, Midland Man Charged in Connection with Deadly West Midland Shooting, by Mercedes Cordero. A 20-year-old Midland man has been arrested in connection with a deadly November 2022 West Midland shooting. Alex Mitchell was being held in Midland County Jail on Tuesday for murder, a first-degree felony charge, and a Class A misdemeanor of failing to report felony with serious bodily injury or death results. Bond information for the murder charge was not available. On November 30th, at 4:56 p.m., the Midland Police Department responded to the Renew Andrews Apartments, located at 1902 North Midland Drive, in reference to shots fired. Officers found a 17-year-old male victim who sustained multiple gunshot wounds to his body. The victim was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, where he was later pronounced deceased, according to a previous Reporter Telegram report. During the investigation, MPD detectives found several messages between Mitchell and the victim. According to the messages, they are setting up a narcotics deal. Witnesses gave descriptions of the suspects to detectives, according to the arrest affidavit. MPD detectives issued an arrest warrant for Mitchell after finding the message threat, matching the description provided by witnesses, and discovering he had been in possession of a firearm that was left behind at the scene. This article is entitled, Midlander Arrested After Threatening Woman with Box Cutter Outside Walmart, by Mercedes Cordero. A Midland woman was arrested after threatening a family attempting to enter a Walmart, according to court documents. Gloria Denise Young, 63, was being held in Midland County Jail on two counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, second-degree felonies. Bond is set at a total of $50,000. Midland Police Department officers were dispatched Friday at about 1:41 p.m. to the Walmart Supercenter near Interstate 20. The victim told officers that while she was parking, a woman came up to her window and asked for money. While walking to the front doors, the woman, identified as Young, came up to her and her family asking for money again, according to the arrest affidavit. After telling Young she did not have cash on her, Young pulled out a pink cutting instrument and told the victim, "I'm going to cut you," according to the arrest affidavit. The cutting instrument was identified as a box cutter. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, January 25th. Danny Pruitt. Danny Lee Pruitt, age 68, of Midland, went to be with the Lord on Sunday, January 15th. The celebration of life service will be Wednesday, February 1st at 11 a.m. at the Christian Church of Midland, 2608 West Neely. Danny was born on May 10, 1954, in Midland, to Woodrow Wilson Pruitt and Myrtle Alice Hurt Pruitt, who preceded him in death. Also preceding him in death are his brothers Clifton Allen Pruitt and Jerry Lynn Pruitt, as well as his sister Patricia Elaine Wright. He is survived by his wife Georgia Lee Pruitt of Midland, who he has known and loved since he was 13 years old. He is also survived by his daughter, Heather Leanne Fay, husband Justin Fay of Princeton, Texas, his son Nathan Robert Pruitt of Midland, his son Ryan Adam Pruitt, wife Holly, of Fulshear, Texas, five grandchildren, a brother Michael Paul Pruitt, and sister Norma Jean Treadway. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, and online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Helen Joyce Kimbrell. Helen Joyce Kimbrough went to be with the Lord on January 17th. Born to Lorena and Fred Moore on June 13, 1940, in Roscoe, Texas, Helen blessed this world for 82 years with her love, kindness, grace, and beautiful smile. Helen is survived by her daughters, Dana Reyes and Helen is survived by her daughters, Dana Reyes and Pam Montgomery, and husband Rick, son John O. Salisbury, son Todd Salisbury and wife Lori, son Jay Salisbury and wife Tracy, 16 grandchildren and 20 great-grandchildren. Helen is preceded in death by husband Jeff Kimbrough, sister Louise McCauley, brothers Bob Moore and Mike Moore, son Dale Salisbury, and grandson Benjamin Montgomery. Memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. Saturday, January 28th, at Christ Church Anglican. The family burial will be private. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that you consider donating to Christ Church Anglican or to the American Legion Auxiliary Unit 19 in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Marilyn Poole Allen, November 2, 1934 to November 9, 2022. Marilyn was born in Fresno, California, to Lawrence B. and Asa Griggs Myers. She was preceded in death by her parents, Lawrence and Asa Myers, and her husband Neil Allen. She is survived by her daughters Pamela Poole Stevens and Marcy Poole Hand of Amarillo, and Victoria Poole Freeman of Corrales, New Mexico, her 6 grandchildren and 8 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, please help support Marilyn's passion by sending donations to the Texas Network Theaters, www.texastheaters.org. Death Notices. Frances Lamoyan Bradshaw. Frances Lamoyan Bradshaw, 93, of Midland, passed away January 21st. Public viewing will be from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday, January 27th, at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Memorial service and private burial will be held at a later date. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hi, this is Christy, and I'm continuing to read the Odessa American for Wednesday, January 25th, 2023. Juvenile Center Ready to Receive Sealed Bids by Royal McGregor. The Ector County Commissioner's Court was a full house on Tuesday morning. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett and Ector County Commissioner for Precinct 4, Billy Hall, presided over their first commissioner meeting. In the second meeting of 2023, the court voted 4-1 to accept competitive sealed bids for the new Juvenile Justice Center. Hall, whose precinct would be the home of the new Juvenile Justice Center, said he wants to have an idea of what could be built and what the price would be. As far as I'm concerned, this is just a gathering because we can't make a decision without the information, Hall said. I'm okay with just going out for a bid and see what happens. If nobody bids on it, we are back to square one. Fawcett cast the lone dissenting vote for the Juvenile Justice Center. Fawcett explained his vote after the meeting. I think it's a waste of county resources to putting this back out, knowing that we aren't going to be building a facility for the future with the price that we have before us. Fawcett said, we didn't get any bids the last time we put it out. I haven't seen construction prices go down. What this means is that we are more flexible on the size of the facility that we are going to be looking at. In my mind, building a facility with less beds doesn't solve the issue at all. Fawcett also said he has begun conversations with Midland County Judge Terry Johnson and the Texas Juvenile Justice Department about creating a regional juvenile justice facility. The Juvenile Justice Center which was okayed through $25 million in certificates of obligation, was planned to be a 32-bed facility. Ector County purchasing agent Lucy Soto said contractors will also be able to bid on a larger facility than 32 beds. The proposed facility would have four separate pods that can house eight kids each. The proposed facility would be nearly 49,000 square feet. There would also be a separate area for probation, as well as keeping kids who are coming into the facility away from those leaving the facility. Soto also explained to the court the competitive bidding window will open Tuesday and be due back on March 21st. She said there will also be a pre-bid meeting on February 9th where contractors can have their questions answered. After speaking in executive session about entering into a lease agreement between the county and Congressman August Pfluger's office, the court decided to approve the agreement. The office space will be pro bono, but Pfluger's office will be responsible for furnishing the space. The court also approved an $80,000 past due amount for the Ector County Coliseum to pay for internet services. The court also allowed Ector County Chief Technical Officer Mario Ornelas and Coliseum Director Aaron Martin to renegotiate a lower speed of internet to 1 gigabyte. The Coliseum is currently running 4 gigabytes. The court also approved a 5-year contract with Odessa Jackalopes. The court also approved a 5-year contract with Jack Shack Entertainment Concessions Organization, with the additional of looking into a separate account for concession within 6 months. The court voted 4-1 to table the appointment of Fawcett to the policy board of the Permian Basin Metropolitan Planning Organization. Commissioner for Precinct 1, Mike Gardner, currently serves on the policy board for the Permian Basin Metropolitan Planning Organization. Gardner was approved 4-1 to stay on the policy board. Fawcett was the lone dissenting vote. Fawcett expressed during the meeting he was surprised and highly disappointed to table the decision of his appointment to the policy board for the Permian Basin Metropolitan Planning Organization. Though he wasn't selected to serve on the policy board, Fawcett said, "This won't cause ill feelings moving forward. I think Commissioner Gardner is a very solid commissioner, and his head and heart are in the right place," Fawcett said. "This is one agenda item. It's one committee. It's a committee that meets once a month, that it has a lot of influence on our road system, but I'm not going to stay disconnected by any means." The court denied any cellular phone and monthly service for Justice of the Peace Precinct 3, as no other Justice of the Peace has this agreement. The court expressed interest in revisiting this item during its yearly budget meetings in August. Due to the weather, the presentation from Johnson Controls was tabled. The agenda item of action regarding the cancellation of the measurement and verification services from Johnson Controls was also tabled. OC BAM BizHub offer entrepreneur certification. Midland BAM BizHub in Midland now offers an entrepreneurial certification program through Odessa College, and it's planning to place the program in other colleges around the region. Michael Crane, president of BAM, said the first class was offered in June of last year. BAM BizHub is the nonprofit side of the company that offers business classes, and BAM is the for-profit side that works with clients to develop their businesses. We actually put it in motion with Odessa College and Howard College, and I have a pretty good prediction and that we are going to be able to play it into other colleges before it's all over with, Crane said. He added that they were working with South Plains College and New Mexico Junior College to bring the program there and possibly universities as well. It is a 10-week program through Odessa College, and Crane and executive partner Angel Garcia teach the courses. Crane said it takes entrepreneurs through all of the phases of business development up to go into market. Mentoring is also offered. It is starting to really grab some traction. What we wind up doing is that we actually did a proof of concept ourselves on the class, Crane said. they have had 1,021 students so far since the class started. The courses are mainly via video conference, but four are face-to-face. That includes onboarding, business model, business plan, and financials, and a review of what they've learned and any suggestions they can offer to make it better. They go through items like financial projections, investor fact sheets, lending opportunities, which include everything that the Small Business Administration offers to investors. BAM has helped a wide range of businesses start. We've helped a snow cone truck get up and going, and then we're working with a couple large-scale businesses overseas. Even here locally, like in the Houston area, a large manufacturing company. They're looking to relocate. They're looking at the Permian, so we're finding gaps for them to see if they can fit. They're pretty large scale. Even a large tortilla factory in Mexico wanting to relocate here to the United States, we're working with them to find a gap here where they can fit in. So the range is really broad that we're able to help. Now, of course, someone like the Chevron or Pioneer, they're a little too big, Garcia said. But if you are trying to make a move and you need resources and you're looking for assistance in how to strategize your moves, then we're for you, he added. Crane and Garcia met at University of Texas Permian Basin. Crane was the executive director of the economic development and oversaw the Small Business Development Center, and Garcia worked there. When I left, we wanted to create something else for the community, I think with more value. This is how we wanted to do it. There was a lot of missing parts, you might say, the way it was before, who stepped into this business, and now what we're doing is we're just filling it up so small businesses all have the same opportunity with the same amount of resources that can help them start their ideas and grow their businesses, Crane said. They have several guest lecturers with different areas of expertise, like grants, legal and intellectual property, and Dilip Rao of Houston. Crane's wife, Sandra, who has 35 years of retail experience, put together a program for customer service. People on the BAM board also have financing, retail, legal, franchising, and many other expertise that help people get their businesses off the ground. Crane said BAM was the something that was missing in this area before. As a business guy myself who owned a manufacturing company, I wish there was something like this available for me. You earn hard knocks, but I know hard knocks cost money. This is a good way to maybe try to help sustain some of the startups with such increasing failure rate. That's what we're trying to stop, Crane said. He added that they have an 80 to 90% success rate. That's not just because they took our class, but they took hard mentorship as well. I think the biggest thing about us is we don't do a business plan and send you to a bank. We're a partner for the life of the business, Crane said. He added that businesses they've mentored can call them if they've been in business for 10 years or more. Data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that approximately 20% of new businesses fail the first 2 years of being open, 45% during the first 5 years, and 65% during the first 10 years. Only 25% of new businesses make it to the 15-year or more, according to Investopedia. BAM also has a podcast every other week called BAM Biz Talk, hosted by Crane and Garcia. They just kicked off season 2. Garcia said they have had guests on every show except the first one where they introduce themselves. We try and keep a very varied group, but you know, it's entrepreneur-focused, Garcia said. Crane said the first show had Javier Hoven and Midland at-large city council member Dan Corrales is a champion of their organization. One of the next podcasts will feature Midland Mayor Lori Blong. We're giving this out every 2 weeks to get to know people that are in our community who are in business or have something to do with businesses, that they can echo their experience, their tribulations, and their roadblocks, and things to be careful of when you start up, Crane said. We've had fun with that, and I think it's really informational, if you will, for the community, and maybe get to know somebody that you like, that you know, and you can reach out and touch. These are all people within our community except for two huge professors from Oklahoma University and from Lafayette. We do have a relationship coming, maybe later on in the first quarter, will be Kansas State University and somebody coming from Tulane that will probably do an interview with us as well, Crane said. Wintry weather. A person walks down 8th Street as it begins to snow Tuesday. The forecast for today calls for mostly sunny skies and a high of 48. Photos by Michael Bauer, Odessa American. Ducks swim in the pond at Odessa Memorial Garden Park Tuesday morning as the rain stops. Tuesday morning saw sleet coming down in the Odessa area while Lubbock was hit with snow. Rain slowly falls on buffalo statues at Odessa Memorial Garden Park Tuesday morning. Couple indicted on 8-year-old's death. Mother charged with capital murder. OA News at OAOA.com. An Ector County grand jury has indicted the mother of an 8-year-old boy who died in November on a capital murder charge. The boy's stepfather is also facing prison in connection with the death. According in an indictment, Megan Marie Lang is accused of applying pressure to Arturo Coca's throat or neck or blocking his nose or mouth, which resulted in his death, November 5th. In addition to capital murder of a child under 10, she's also facing two injury to a child counts for allegedly hitting him and failing to provide him with adequate nutrition or medical care, the indictment states. Rodolfo Reyes is also accused of failing to provide the child adequate medical care or nutrition. The grand jury indicted him on a single charge of injury to a child by omission. The injury to a child charges are first-degree felonies punishable by 5 years to life. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivand has not yet decided if he will seek the death penalty for Lang. The capital murder charge is also punishable by life without the possibility of parole, according to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report. Lang called 911 from her home in the 2000 block of North Huntington Avenue on November 5th to report Arturo was unresponsive. Life-saving measures taken by firefighters and medical center hospital personnel were unsuccessful. Lang told authorities Arturo had woken up after defecating and urinating on himself, and after she cleaned him up, he stopped breathing, the report stated. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said Lang and Reyes, the boy's stepfather, attributed the boy's death to diabetes, but a forensic pathologist ruled the cause of Arturo's death was asphyxiation by manual strangulation with underlying causes of neglect. He also determined the boy was malnourished. Griffiths also told the Odessa American the boy weighed 35 pounds. Lang and Reyes remain in Ector County Jail.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read the inside pages from the Odessa American, published Wednesday, January 25th, 2023. Patton asks counsel for sports complex study, by Kim Smith. Odessa Parks and Recreation staff pitched the idea of spending $15,000 on a sports complex feasibility project Tuesday to the Odessa City Council. Director Steve Patton and Deputy Director Mike Christman reminded the council a sports complex was identified as a priority when the city's master plan was unveiled last year. Synergy Sports Global would not only identify the needs and priorities of the community, but look for opportunities for sports tourism, potential locations, and potential costs. Knowing that raising taxes isn't always feasible, Christman said he envisions a public-private partnership could be established. When council member at large, Denise Swanner, stressed she didn't want to still be discussing the study in 6 months, Christman assured her it would only take 4 to 6 weeks. Although the study hasn't been budgeted, Patton said he was confident his department could find the funds. Mayor Javier Hovind said he's heard several suggestions for possible complex locations from different groups, including north of Home Depot, off of Billy Hext, and near Parks Bell. The city also owns property south of Interstate 20 and near Dixie Boulevard and Poole Road. Christman said Synergy would be able to offer an unbiased opinion and would also be able to look at infrastructure needs, ingress and egress. Council member Steve Thompson said he opposes placing the complex near Interstate 20, but council member Chris Haney said placing one there would help grow the city. Then you start building motels out there, and you start building everything. We start growing the city, not just on the east side. We start growing on the south side, the west side, and that becomes a site for everybody coming in. Let's put something pretty up there, Haney said. The item is expected to come up again on the council's next council agenda. Patton also told the council the Parks Advisory Board is recommending the city council enter into an agreement with Larry Lee of LeeCo Properties. Lee has agreed to develop a 3.85 neighborhood park in the Desert Ridge subdivision, and the Odessa Parks Foundation has agreed to fund the playground equipment for the park. Once the project is completed, Lee would deed the property over to the city, and the city would agree to spend approximately $18,000 a year to maintain it, Patton said. No additional personnel would need to be hired, he said. The park would also include a small dog park and walking trail, he said. City of Odessa Controller Seth Bowles also gave the City Council a presentation on the final rules governing American Rescue Plan Act funds. Bowles answered a long-lingering question of some council members who have wondered if the funds could be used for firefighter raises. According to the rules, ARPA can be used to provide worker retention incentives, including reasonable increases in compensation and paying for ancillary administrative costs related to hiring, support, and retention. They can also be used to provide premium pay for workers who performed essential duties during the pandemic and investments in water and sewer infrastructure in certain circumstances, Bowles said. Bowles said the city has just under $9 million left from the first tranche of money it received, including a $3 million repaid to the city by Medical Center Hospital. There's also $10,161,480 available from a second tranche. Bowles said his figures do not take into consideration the $7 million in raises the council voted 5-2 to approve in December. The council instructed Bowles to reach out to Odessa Regional Medical Center to inquire if they still plan to ask the city for $1 million. The hospital indicated nearly 2 years ago they needed the funds but never filled out the required paperwork. In other action, the council directed city staff to create a request for proposals for a forensic audit. Swanner complained that when she's asked about specific funds, she's always been told they're in the general fund, and she finds that too broad. Hovind said he has questions about sales tax money being commingled between city and Odessa Development Corporation accounts, where game room fees have gone, and why Odessa Fire Rescue crews sometimes have to pay for their own training when OFR gets training funds. He had also liked to make sure that the city is in compliance when it comes to the expenditure of certificates of obligation. Council member Mark Mata said the city has had the same audit firm for years and years and years. This is kind of a checks and balances on them to make sure they haven't missed anything in the past, Mata said. It was recently discovered the auditing firm Weaver made 26 mistakes with TxDOT, and he finds it hard to believe they haven't made mistakes with the city or ODC, Hovind said. Three incumbents file for ECISD board. Three incumbent members of the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees have filed for re-election. Tammy Hawkins, position 6, Dennis Jones, position 7, and Donna Smith, position 3, have all filed for the May 6th election. Carol Gregg, position 1, has not yet filed. The filing period lasts through February 17th. No one has filed for the Odessa College Board of Trustees. Those up for election this year are Bruce Shearer, place 1, Vice Chair Dr. Tara Deaver, place 8, and Hortensia Del Bosque, place 2. Local News Roundup. ECSO asking for public's assistance. The Ector County Sheriff's Office hopes the public will help them identify the occupants of a dark Chevrolet truck that may have information about a November shooting that left one man dead and another one injured. According to the ECSO, deputies were dispatched to Pat's Place in the 7400 block of Andrews Highway around 11:30 p.m. November 4th about a shooting. When they arrived, they found Aaron Ramos, 27, dead, and a 25-year-old man injured. Nicholas James Thompson, 41, was arrested on suspicion of murder and 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and released from the Ector County Jail after posting $400,000 in surety bonds. He was rearrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon December 21st and re-released after posting a $100,000 surety bond. During the investigation, it was determined the Chevy was traveling northbound on the service road of Andrews Highway and came to a stop at the intersection of Georgia Street and Andrews Highway Service Road. Investigators are attempting to locate the occupants of the Chevy because they hope they have pertinent information concerning this case. If you have any information concerning this case, please contact Ector County Sheriff's Office, Investigator H. Zavala at 432-335-3050 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 22-E4732. Man arrested on suspicion of shooting storage building and house. A 24-year-old Ector County man was arrested on a deadly conduct charge Monday afternoon after deputies said he shot a storage building and a house in the 500 block of East Harrisburg. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, dispatchers received a 911 call around 2:30 p.m. Monday from someone who heard a woman screaming for help and several gunshots. When they arrived, they found Hubenintino Gallen sitting in a driveway and bullet holes in a storage building on the same property and in a residence directly north across the street, the report stated. Gallen was arrested on suspicion of deadly conduct discharging a firearm. He remained in the Ector County Jail Tuesday on a $25,000 surety bond. The charge is a third-degree felony punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. Connection Christian to host Story Slam at New Cafe. Story Slams are events that celebrate storytelling by inviting participants to share true, personal, brief stories with an audience. The Story Slam will be held from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. February 2nd at Café de Luna, located in Santa Fe Square on 42nd Street in Odessa. The public is invited to this family-friendly event to hear previously curated stories and purchase food and drink in support of this new local business. Connection Christian Church, here in the Permian Basin, chose the theme Origin Stories for their first Story Slam. These stories tell of a moment of hearing God's call and how responding to that call changed lives. The Bible is full of stories. This year, our church is studying how these biblical stories are truly stories of us. Our lives continue the stories of Scripture. So telling our stories helps us grow in our faith. Plus, it's just a whole lot of fun. Pastor Don Weeks commented in a news release. Connection Christian Church, a congregation in the Disciple of Christ movement, is located at 4241 Tanglewood Lane and offers worship at 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. on Sundays.
Hi, this is Bailey reading the obituaries for Wednesday, January 25th, 2023. Elma Vedrine Brown. Alma V. Brown, 106 years of age, of Odessa, Texas, died on Friday, January 20th, 2023, in Odessa. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, January 27th, at Faith Tabernacle Church, located at 1420 East 42nd Street in Odessa, with Janet Fisher of Faith Tabernacle officiating. Burial will follow at 1 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Alma is preceded in death by her husband, Clyde P. Brown, daughter, Elmarine B. Berry, sisters, Erminence Fontenot and Lena Roach, and by brothers Howard and Dominic Vedrine. Alma is survived by her sons, Clyde C. Brown and wife, Dora, Wiley G. Brown and wife, Fredna, Willard L. Brown and wife, Nancy, and daughter, Janet Fisher and husband, Irwin. Alma's grandchildren, Roy C. Jert, Philip Brown, Linda Brown Easton, Cindy Adgreg, Debbie Harris, Tammy Edwards, Wiley Cudd, Chon Brown, Antone Little, Kenneth Brown, Jason Brown, Justin Brown, and Heather Denny, Rachel Tigpin, along with 15 great-grandchildren. Memorial gifts may be given to Faith Tabernacle Church, 1420 East 42nd Street, Odessa, Texas, 79762, or to the Gideon International, P.O. Box 140800, Nashville, Tennessee, 37214-0800, for Bible distribution. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at sunsetodessa.com. Tomas Gomez. Tomas Gomez, forever in our hearts. It is with great sadness we announce that early in the morning of January 7th, 2023, our beloved father, Tomas J. Gomez Sr., 82, who was surrounded by his loved ones, left to be with our Lord. He was born on February 19, 1940, to Faustino Gomez and Lenore Jaquez in Fort Stockton, Texas. His passing was preceded by his parents, brothers, sisters, and eldest son, survived by his wife of 46 years, Andrea Gomez, his daughters Anita Espinoza Lupe, Aurora Gomez, Lenore Moreno, Linda Scarborough, Jason, and his sons Tomas Gomez Jr., Laura, David Gomez, Caroline, Daniel Gomez, Yvette, and 30 grandchildren over 60 great-grandchildren. Serving as pallbearers, Tomas Gomez Jr., Daniel Gomez, David Gomez, Oscar Bullis, Isaac Fuentes, and Gerardo Fuentes III. A visitation will be held Saturday, January 28th, from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home. A second visitation will be held Sunday, January 29th, from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home. A chapel service will be held at Odessa Funeral Home, January 30th at 2 p.m. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens, as he promised, Deuteronomy 26:19. Patricia Ruth Peacock, Kermit, Texas. Patricia Ruth Peacock, age 88, passed away on Saturday, January 21st in Austin, Texas. Pat was born on March 1, 1934 in Austin, Texas, to Raymond and Helen Kirk Deason. She married Rodney Bruce Peacock on December 22, 1952 in Conroe, Texas, which was the beginning of sharing 67 blessed years together. She is preceded in death by her husband, Rodney Peacock, parents Raymond and Helen Deason, granddaughter Cheryl Chera, Lynn Minnison, brother Mickey Deason and sister Becky Damron. Patricia is survived by her children, Mark Peacock and wife Betsy, Priscilla Minnison, and husband Mike Matt Peacock and wife Cynthia, and Becky Krieger and husband Kelly, grandchildren Jennifer Krieger, Matt Krieger and wife Misty, Michelle Peacock Miho and husband Ferris, Sarah Peacock, Julia Peacock, Nathan Peacock, and Kenan Peacock, and great-grandchildren. Maverick, Mia, Madison, Krager, and Layla Miho. Pat is also survived by her sister, Diane O'Leary, Jim, deceased, and Betty Greenshield Cash, Jim and Jean Greenshield, deceased, brothers, Peter Deason, Mark A. and Harriet Deason, deceased, and David Deason and wife Nancy, and numerous cousins, nephews, nieces, and friends. A visitation will start at 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday, January 26th at the Family Service Funeral Parlor. A funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, January 27th at First Baptist Church in Kermit, and Dudley Mufflin's officiating. Burial will follow in Kermit Cemetery. Pallbearers will be members of the Kermit Volunteer Fire Department, the St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital, P.O. Box 1000, Department 142, Memphis, Tennessee, 38101-9908. Arrangements are entrusted to Family Services Funeral Parlor, and condolences may be sent to the family at www.fs-fp.com. Janice Roden. Our mom and Grammy went peacefully home to be with the Lord on a January 20th, 2023. Surrounded by family at her home after a lengthy illness, she was 86 years old. She was born December 5th, 1936 in Wink, Texas to W.E. and Stella Rush. She was the oldest of three siblings. She was preceded in death by her husband and Prince Charming Ted Roden, her parents W.E. Rush and Stella Fletcher, her sister Joyce Rush, brother Dwayne Rush, and son Randy Whetstone. Jan's family is extremely grateful for her wonderful and loving caregivers Virginia, Cherie, Lucille, and Mona. Also her friend and physician Dr. Joel and Charlotte Adams and Dr. Abdul Qadir. Special thanks to Viola, her longtime friend and hairdresser, Rose, who always made her smile, and home hospice. Jan Roden was generous, loving, strong, kind, and thoughtful, and a friend to all. A visitation will be held by her family from 4 to 6 p.m. on Wednesday, January 25th, at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home, located at 601 North Allegheny, Odessa, Texas, 79761. A service celebrating the life of Jan Roden is scheduled for 10 a.m. Thursday, January 26th, at Mid-Cities Community Church, located at 8700 Texas 191, Midland, Texas 79707. Our friend Gary Brown will officiate. Services are at the direction of Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home in Odessa. The family asked that in lieu of flowers, memorials be made in Jan Roden's name to the Permian Basin Rehabilitation Center, located at 620 North Allegheny, Odessa, Texas 79761, or to the charity of your choice.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.